Presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Esports Research Report. I'm Dr. Stephanie Orem from Emmanuel College in Boston.
And I'm Dr. Brian McCauley here in the city of DreamHack in Jönköping at the Media Management and Transformation Center. And our guest today, whose name I'm going to have to try to figure out how to pronounce because she's very Spanish, is Dr. Eulalia Febra-Coll, who is a lecturer and researcher in both esports and music, and also the chief operating officer of the eDojo, an esports education program in Barcelona. I said that right, Spain. Welcome to the show. And Eulalia, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself?
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. The pronunciation was spot on, so... No worries for that. I started off my career as a musicologist who like gaming, and I downloaded League of Legends pretty early on, like on season one or two, and I never connected those two dots until 3 to 4 years ago, actually. So yeah, I basically work in a conservatory here in the Balearic Islands where I live. And I also work at an online university, Universidad Internacional de La Rioja. And as you said, I am the chief operating officer, I don't really like that title, at eDojo. So yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
I have an immediate question, because what is a musicologist?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Musicologist is not a psychologist, as many people frequently ask. A musicologist is someone who studies music in its social and cultural context, mainly. So there are a few branches. Some people study, let's say, historical music, Bach, Beethoven, Mozart. Some people study contemporary music, and also popular music, which is in the area I specialized in. And then there is ethnomusicology, which is a fun one, which is the study of other cultures. Recently, it has been a debate around it because ethnomusicologists also tend to study themselves now, but the discipline started as the study of others, like the music of others. So yeah, we basically study music from all its possible angles.
Cool.
I've learned something new.
I was going to say, I actually knew what musicology was only because I had a professor in grad school and that's what he did. And I had never heard of it before. And yeah, it's such a cool area. And I love how you've been able to bridge that with gaming music as an area. Yeah,
actually, there is a specific branch within, I'd say, popular music or cultural studies, which is ludomusicology, which is specifically a branch that is dedicated to studying video games and music.
Awesome.
And, yeah, there is a lot of like specific studies on video games, on in-game music, let's say, but there isn't much yet about the whole scene, the whole esports scene.
Awesome. So I think, why don't we start with, we often ask people on the show, or always, I should say, every time, Brian insists, how do you define esports? Because a lot of people approach it in sort of different ways.
Yes, that's a tricky one, actually. I mean, I would define esports not as a specific gaming path or competitive gaming sort of thing, but I'd rather say it is a whole ecosystem in which there are a lot of parts composing it. Like video games are the core, are the center, and these video games would have to be competitive in the way that traditional sports are. But nowadays I consider them to be much more than that. I consider them to be of course, the games and the players, but also the managers, the fans, even the physiotherapists, do you say like that? Nutritionists, whatever. I think it's a very big cosmos that composes it. So I probably that doesn't answer the question, but
I like it. I think it's one of my favorite answers we've had, because I think we are getting to the point where maybe, and God, I don't want to stoke any debates like people have about this, but I think we're almost getting past that point of just competitive video gaming. I think you've actually made a really startlingly good point there, that when I'm doing research papers on it, I'm not talking about competitive video gaming. I'm talking about all the stuff that's coming from around us. I think that's one of my favorites. So you got your PhD from the Cardiff University, and it was called, I have it here, Evolved Traditions, the Role of Music in Contemporary Spiritual Practices. Please elaborate on what that PhD was and how you did it.
I mean, that was one of the best times of my life. Doing that PhD was so much fun. And I also, by the end of it, I was so over it. I mean, I think everyone who's done a PhD experiences the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Once you're done, you kind of don't want to hear anything related for a few years.
I couldn't even tell you the title of mine anymore. So, you know, you probably forgot yours as well. Blocked it out. Smartphone gaming or something. I can't remember.
So, yeah, I also started in a very different field. What I did actually was I've always been very interested in rituality, because I started my undergrad as an ethnomusicologist, minor major, I don't know the equivalences there, but I started there, and rituals and the spirituality and religion have always been fascinating to me. I'm not a Christian, I'm not a Buddhist, I wouldn't even say I'm an atheist, I just don't have that spiritual.
You're a musicologist.
Yeah, that's enough.
Almost a religion.
So it's always been very fascinating to me how people find this kind of shelter, this kind of, this kind of comfort in religion, in ritual and spirituality. And it's been fascinating because I would like to have that faith. I would like to be able to go there sometimes. Like, for example, my grandmother, she's a Buddhist, and she's very, very, very clear in the sense that she believes that when she's gone, she will be going to this pure place, right? So it's always been very, very fascinating to me. And I started my PhD as a continuation of my MA, actually. And there was this ritual, I'd call it a ritual, but it's marketed as a personal development practice, which is called holorhythmic breathwork. And there is also its counterpart, that's holotropic breathwork. Maybe you have heard of it. It was developed in California in the 1970s, I think. And yeah, there are these practices where you basically do a very intense physical activity, get into a specific state of mind, which some say it's a non-ordinary state of consciousness or an altered state of consciousness. And music kind of guides you through this spiritual, actually, experience. You have to, at the end of it, you have to have the sense that you've reached something extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a trance yes. kind of thing, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's there is a lot of literature talking about trance and music, and these practices are embedded in that. So what I did was I studied this one and two more practices happening in Barcelona, which are actually globally known. And I tried to untangle how music actually works to get people to feel that spirituality, to get that sense of having overcome a personal boundary. And I reframed it sort of in a rite of passage kind of way too. And yeah, I had a lot of fun doing that. And I had to, well, we had a very intense debate, let's say, during my viva about the title of my thesis, because I called it Evolved Traditions as a suggestion of one of my informants. And my viva didn't like that, the examiners, because they thought it was, suggested improvements or positive evolution. So we ended up putting it between inverted commas. That's the history behind the title, which is kind of lame, but yeah.
It was fascinating. I mean, could someone extend your research going, the 90s rave scene in the UK?
Yeah, absolutely.
Strobe lights and ecstasy pills was the evolved rituals. I mean, I'm serious, like, is that?
Yeah. I mean, there is a lot of research on that a lot. And the only difference I'd say, or what I think my contribution was, in it related to the how these rituals are sort of new, but they present themselves as ancient. So raves do not have this, well, some do, but when people go to a rave or program music for a rave, they don't have this kind of idea of we're going to get into our deepest ancient sacred cells, yada yada, right? So yeah, I mean, I would say you can read it, but you don't need to.
I'd love to have the time to read it, but
I feel like that's always my response when people ask about it. I say, you can read it, but you don't need to. No obligation. Yeah. So
I say punish somebody. If you want to punish somebody, read it to them.
So this is fascinating. And I'm just wondering, so how do you go from studying religion and ritual to video games and esports? Because that's a leap.
Yeah, there is a leap, but it isn't actually. There is a very interesting point there. There is a connection that's so strong. And the thing is, when you go to an esports event, when you go to an online event, it is a ritual. It has this rituality. And yeah, there are a lot of things that are not the same, of course, but a lot of the concepts that I managed are actually pretty similar. For example, everything I discussed in my thesis about emotion and state of consciousness, these things have actually been studied in this book, right? How you can get a deeper focus doing A, B, or C, how you can improve your performance, how can you improve your, I don't know, your aim if you do this or that. And music has a very big part in that. So I started off by trying to translate what I did onto video games and specifically esports. And I contacted with these people from the Canary Islands. They have a group called Esport Talent Canarias. And they helped me out starting a project about Fortnite, actually. We studied how Fortnite helped kids in secondary school. So here they would be 12 to 14 years old. How it helped socialize, help them socialize among each other. And we sort of took that essence, that socializing, ritualized, let's say, topics, and placed them into a PE classroom. And it totally worked. I mean, it was kind of crazy because we tried to test it through some surveys, and we were looking for the wrong thing at first. We were looking at, have you liked this set, this class better than the last one? And everyone was like, no, I mean, they are 12. What did we expect, right? I hate everything. So then we looked at the second parameter, which was there by chance, actually. And it was, have you felt more included in the activity? Have you felt that you were more integrated in the class? And there, it was the significant difference that actually made sense of everything.
What did you do? What did you do exactly? Just
what we did was we did two separate experiments, one after the other. On our first class, we did a choreography class, because one of the partners of the colleagues on this paper, well, both of them actually, they work at this big university that's focused on physical education in Barcelona, like it's a faculty or something. And they specialize in choreography and dance. So what we did was, okay, let's take some random dances, make them practice them through videos. We gave them QR codes and these big kind of posters with some info, and we tried to make it pretty. And they had to learn the six dances and then come up with a choreography with some of their partners. And we did that on the first class with random steps like rock, hip hop, whatever. And on the second session, what we did was we chose six very popular Fortnite dances and changed those six like dance moves for the Fortnite dances. And we immediately saw how they were excited. They tried to show off how they already knew these dances to the others, tried to help each other, like this very, let's say, more problematic kids, maybe less attended kids. On the first class, they were just sitting on the ground, like, I don't want to do this. And when we introduced Fortnite, it was like immediate response. So even if they didn't perceive it as a preference or as an improvement, because I mean they weren't really conscious of what was happening, we could see a significant difference, and it was very, very exciting.
So were they all players of Fortnite? Like, did everybody there know Fortnite, or like?
I think a 90% of these kids knew Fortnite. Mm-hmm. There were 60 students, if I'm not wrong. It wasn't a very big sample because we didn't have the means to get to more people, mm-hmm. and it was kind of a pilot study. But yeah, about 90%. It was 3 years ago, though.
Yeah, I mean,
3 years ago, it was when there was all the hype about the dances and the floors and the
Right.
So
right.
Almost every kid knew, and yeah, it turned out great. So that was kind of my bridge towards everything esports, because I was a bit self-conscious, like, I haven't really worked video games before from musicology. Will I be able to do it? Will I not? You know, imposter syndrome. And we all know about that. So when I realized, actually, everything I've studied before is translatable to esports and different contexts and education and everything, like that was the step I needed to take. And there was also my mom, who insisted very, very much that I try that. And yeah, well, also my husband has worked for big teams like Astralis and so on.
Okay, so, wait, but your mom like was pushing you towards esports?
Yeah,
I need to know about that, because that's awesome.
My mom is awesome. She's very, she really likes me to push myself, and she has always encouraged me to push myself. And because she knew how well my husband was doing and how much he enjoyed it, and she knew I've been playing video games since I was a kid. So she kind of helped me go there, right? Mm-hmm. She just gave me that little push. Yeah. It's not
awesome.
My mom is a very modern mom, let's say.
I love it. She's
hammering at Fortnite, swearing at the TV screen at home on the PlayStation.
Well, she used to play with us a lot too. So.
Ah, lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom played Mario Kart. She was steering it like this, moving.
Yeah, mine too.
Like people do now with the Switch. But so yeah. Look, with esports and music, right? So is there links to performance, or is it an aesthetic thing? Or is it just when I hear do 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 do, I get MVP unless somebody else has the same music as CSGO as me. So where does all that lie?
The
performance and aesthetics?
I mean, both ways are, I'd say, coexistent, both cases. There is a lot of people, a lot of music, for example, on rhythm-based games like Osu. You know that? Is it called Osu? Yeah.
The
rhythmic one, which is strongly dependent on music and beat. Or if we were to play Guitar Hero at a professional level, for example, that would be the case too. But if you think Just Dance, which is currently it's coming strong as let's say an esport, maybe, I don't know.
I would watch the heck out of that.
I would. There are a lot of competitions around.
Yeah, there's so many tournaments. It's amazing. Yeah.
So there is this kind of games that work music in a very specific way to help you out, and then there are others which just use it as a mood enhancer. So, for example, in League of Legends, which is the video game that I've been working with the most, when you enter the Summoner's Rift, there is this three-part, very, very long piece, which accompanies you from the beginning with a very soft kind of ambient music with very long melodies, through mid-game where there are a lot of more specific, like violin lines, for example, more specific rhythms, and towards the end, when I think it is when you have taken down about 7 towers or something like that, or some of the inhibitors, then you get like the final part of the piece, which is very majestic and very, let's say they work with, how do I put it in a simple way? They work with our expectations and what we know in, let's say, this globalized world. What we know means there is a big thing happening. It's like when you go through a breakthrough in a movie, when you listen to that kind of piece that is the zenith of everything that coincides with the most intense part. So they do the same thing as they would. So there is the rhythmic accompaniment. There is this mood enhancer, and then there are some pieces that just have music to not have silence, let's say. But it's very weird. I mean, most games have a very, very well thought, a very well planned music development. However, what I've been looking at the most is not that. That's what most ludomusicologists look at, how music in the games works. But there is this other part, apart from these three possibilities, which is everything that happens around. Like what I was meaning when I was saying that esports is this big scene with everyone involved. What I meant is there is music. For example, for that paper I wrote a couple of years ago now about this big opening during the League of Legends final.
Hold on, I have it here. It's in the Journal of Sound, Silence, Image, and Technology, and it's called Living Like Giants, League of Legends, From the Screen to the Stage.
Yes, Yes. Because it started out as a music video, and they... kind of turned it into this very big life event, which was actually transcendent for the people that were there. I interviewed some of the Spanish people that were at the event, and they all coincided that it had this kind of special aura, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. This special kind of vibe to it, which helped the whole experience, helped integrate the experience. And in that sense, it is exactly the same as what I studied on my thesis, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I remember being just blown away by that particular... I am hearing some feedback. Are you picking that up, Brian?
Yep, you're feedbacking.
Is it
mine? No, I am too.
I wasn't a minute ago.
It's the Spanish chick, which is not good with the audio, obviously. You know, look, she's there.
That's weird.
Ruining the audio, going, I know musicologist, but I can't handle audio.
It always happens. I mean, every musicological event, audio doesn't work ever. That's our curse.
Oh, no. Can you still? Okay.
Sure, look, we'll fight through it. It's only a podcast, okay? I'm hearing it myself in double now. But anyway. It's just irony, right? Tell us about the eDojo project. How did it start and what's that all about?
eDojo is a project which started actually some years ago, but I didn't start working with them until a year and a half ago. We are basically an education company, like an education-focused company in esports, but we don't focus in esports at we don't focus on esports education at a higher level. We found that there is a lack of programs, especially in Spain. I'm not sure about the rest of the world, of course, but in Spain there is a lack of programs that address smaller children, like pre-university users. So what we are working on is establishing this kind of programs that can be added to any academy if you have a room with computers and want to get them going and make something out of them. If you have some gaming stations, whatever, and you want to make the most out of them, what we do is we try to incubate
or accelerate education programs.
Yes. Let's say we try to incentivize that their use is the best it could be. We are not against, of course, cyber cafes and everything of that sort. But what we think is we can make the children enjoy while they learn while gaming. It doesn't have to be playing just because you enjoy playing. Like, you could play football or soccer in the United States at the backyard, right, and with your friends every day. Or you could go to a football academy once a week and have a teacher help you improve, and you could have these tutors that help you with your specific issues, and you can meet other kids and you can socialize. So we are kind of presenting it as a socializing and overall education opportunity for the
participants. I can see that. I mean, I've got so many resources, people you've interviewed on performance, and I'll be like, help me. And they'll say, read my paper, and I'll read the paper and I'll forget what I read. But, you know, I have capabilities to find out, to look at resources, to try and improve myself, not as far as kids could improve themselves. So I see what you're doing here. It's to give them that bit of coaching and enhance their experience for when they're not there. And I mean, for kids especially, I don't define myself by my competence at games. You know, it's other stuff I do. But when you're a kid and you're powerless and you're at your go to bed, do your homework, sit down, you can't leave this classroom 45 minutes. You know, there's a really strong desire to be competent at something. And maybe you've got the handsome guy on the football team getting all the girls and you're not. And then if you can be better at games, it gives you a sense of self-worth, because an improvement where you might be getting better at math.
Yeah, that's exactly that. We are trying to improve, especially soft skills, but also some hard skills through esports. We've been working with League of Legends, FIFA, and Rocket League, and Valorant. And we have found out that it really helps. They are kids, but they are also adolescents and young adults. They help them a lot to find this focus. Like, they can play for fun at home, but when they come into the classroom, they are there to practice. And because I'm a musician, I think there is a lot of the same kind of development going on. When you can play at home for fun, but if you don't have a teacher who kind of follows your development, helps you out, gives you strategies to learn, you are not going to improve as much, probably. I mean, there's always the exception, right? But we're also not trying to make like superstars out of this. We're just trying to help out all these kids that like gaming in a more, let's say, planned, more
structured is the word.
Yeah, that's the word. Yeah. Structured way. Absolutely. So yeah, we have a lot of fun with that. We have a very strong design team too, who really helps us make everything, all the resources and everything appealing for our public. And yeah, that's what we do at Itojo.
Is there a big music component to this as well? Or is it like more just about,
I mean, not about our academy proposals or academy programs, but we also have this, I like to call them satellite projects, which is where I started. And we have one which we did last year, we are trying to bring back in a few months, which is called Game Sound, which is a kind of let's say conference day about music and gaming. And we have professional streamers in music. We have maybe some professional gamers too who can talk about their experience, but we also have performers. We have professional performers. We have academic people. I mean, we have teachers, and we kind of try to balance out two worlds that are usually not that close, which for us is very, it's a bit silly, right? I mean, why do we work so separately from the rest of the world when everyone from the rest of the world is would benefit from our work, right? We have, from my perspective, in the academic world, we have kind of isolated ourselves sometimes. And yeah, what we try to do there is to bring everything academic, let's say, into the practical world.
Love it. I absolutely love that. So, Eulalia, as a fellow Catholic country person, right? And, you know, Steph, this is not, you're all wasps or whatever that is. So, you know what all kids are like when they're being brought to church on a Sunday and they don't look very spiritual. They look like they're asleep or fidgety and everything. So when we talk about spirituality and rituals, and I know your experiences are very similar to mine. You're going to church. It's Sunday. Maybe a Friday if you're being naughty. Yeah. But like, is there an aspect that you see that spirituality in those kids when they're playing that your parents expect to happen to you when they bring you to church on a Sunday?
You know, yeah, I think the experience can be very similar, especially in big events where you kind of have the congregation, which are the other fans, right? But also when you are playing, because you enter these states of consciousness, which are usually deep focus, a state of flow, artistic mentality, this kind. I mean, someone watching this will know who Chistem Mithali is, I'm sure, in education. He theorized about this state called flow, which is state.
Csikszentmihalyi, I know how to pronounce it. I practiced it. I wrote it down.
Okay,
Csikszentmihalyi, I learned that off from a PhD.
Nice.
Perfect. So you know who he is and about his flow theory. So what he theorized was that when we are very happy doing an activity, when we are deeply focused but also enjoying that activity, we enter this state of flow where we kind of lose track of time, we lose consciousness of our like material selves and go into this dimension, right? He didn't mean it as a spiritual feeling or as a spiritual experience, but I'm pretty sure that what we are dealing with when we talk about the experience of music in church or the experience of music or even gaming in esports is wildly similar.
Oh, that's even better, because kids aren't really having that experience in church. That's what I was saying. So any parents watching, if you want your kids to have some sort of spiritual sense of flow and ritual, when instead of bringing them to church, sit them down with a game of Fortnite for a couple of hours and maybe a couple of nice sodas, and they'll get that spiritual satisfaction from a different place.
You would need a teacher maybe to help you do that, and you would need also, as a musicologist, of course, I would suggest having a very specific playlist to go with it. Like there is a way to enhance your experience if you choose the right music at every.
Okay, time. I'm okay. So for the benefit of anyone who's watching this on YouTube, Eulalia is going to give me some suggestions for music to listen to when you're playing games to enhance your sense of flow, when you're doing aim training. Because we had gamer.com, and when she does aim training, puts music on, whereas I listen to podcasts. So I'm going to ask you now, so after this, when this video goes up, I want a list of some maybe a Spotify playlist or some music that people could actually go, okay, I'm going to try this, because I mean, that I love, I'll try it as well when doing aim training. That's brilliant.
Okay. Great. Usually I wouldn't recommend, if you play a shooter, I wouldn't recommend playing music during, because obvious reasons. I mean, you can't hear enemies.
No, but aim training though, you know, when you're kind of practicing your aim or
well,
spray patterns.
Practice, but also you can do pre-game and post-game, which is very interesting too. For example, if you are playing Call of Duty or you're playing Counter-Strike or whatever shooter you like, you can listen to some specific music before you get into the game and some afterwards, because there are some parameters that can be consciously altered in our mind and our body through music.
Okay, so, I want those after the podcast, not wait until I post it. I'm gonna be trying it tomorrow. I want to be good again. I'm in a slump, right? Like, that's, yeah, that'd be awesome. I totally want to. We have to actually, we have to put an article on the website with a playlist of this, actually.
That'd be great. Yeah,
please. Cool. Everyone would love that. Yeah, so you're in charge of that, Eulalia. It will, you can write a little article and we'll put it up with all the different ways you can listen to improve yourself, to bring yourself in the zone. Because
you could be my test subject.
But I mean, I haven't
been able to test it, actually. Like, I haven't been able to empirically test it.
But I mean, it makes sense because, like, traditional athletes do that all the time, right? Yes. They often show them getting off, like, the team bus and they're listening to, you know, their own headsets. I used to compete in public speaking and debate, but I would listen to music, right? To, like, pump myself up beforehand and get myself in a mindset. So, like, I think there's something really natural about that, right? Like, music, different kinds of music you choose for different moments that puts you in a state of mind. And yeah.
I've got the best example. The best example is Black Eyed Peas. We're going to have a good time tonight. Whatever it was, I've forgotten, I blacked it out. But, like, it's literally...
Yeah, not like that.
We're going to have... I know, but I hate it and I love it. You know, and it's literally repeat over and over. We're going to have a good time. Yeah. People go, okay, we'll get back. We're going out now. We're going to have a good time. And yeah, we're going to have a good time. And then everybody goes wrong because they drank too much Black Eyed Peas. But it's the same thing, right? It's
That works simple. Because it's kind of a mantra. I mean, it's kind of repetitive, right?
Yeah,
and it's very steady. The beat's very steady, so that would work. But if you preferred dance, electronic music, techno, that will work too, because
like the finger bus is coming.
Yeah, for example.
That's the Spanish one, isn't it?
The finger bus. Is it? I don't think it's Spanish.
Pretend it's not, then, just in case it is, because you'd be embarrassed as a musicologist.
Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it is. So yeah, what I also like to suggest, I always do actually to everyone who asks me this kind of, can you make up a list for me or whatever, is start off in the kind of music that you like, because it can be the best kind of picked out music for a specific stage. But if you hate it, it's not going to work. So it has to resonate with you. So that's very important. And yeah, if anyone watching wants me to try and do a list for them, I would be super happy to, because I'm so eager to try this for specific people. Oh,
Amber back. Steph's Wi-Fi is back on.
I'm back. All right. Yeah. But yeah, I want to know what the esports scene in Barcelona is like. I visited Barcelona, but I was there so briefly. I didn't get a chance to really sink my teeth into the esports scene. So what's it like there?
I mean, both in Barcelona, Madrid, and the rest of Spain, actually, it's very, very popular. And there are quite a lot of companies that are coming up with a lot of different services, which I think adds a lot of value to it and makes it a serious kind of practice, right? Because since a few years ago, while in the US and in some parts of Asia, esports were always established and people knew what they were, in Spain it was just the thing for weird kids. So now we have, I would like to think, we have come past that, and there are a lot of proposals, a lot of ideas that help build this sector here. And there are quite a lot of teams that play in a very wide range of games. There is a lot of institutions that have kind of professionalized different esports in different leagues. So I think it's improving very much. But on the other hand, because it has kind of come all at once, I mean, it has been a very big boom, let's say, in Spain. Mm. There is a lot of confusion between professionals and amateurs. So there is a lot of streamers, of course, who do a fantastic job, and there is a lot of professional, what I'd say, community managers that work perfectly fine. But for example, specifically in the education area, although there are specific esports programs coming up slowly, there is a lot of what I'd like to call maybe ghost programs. Like, they sell an idea, they sell a wish, maybe, right?
Mm.
But they, some of them do, they are very good professionals, but some of them don't even have any kind of education qualification, or they haven't really studied anything. They just find this kind of way to improve their business, to make money, and they go there. But they don't have specific stuff that can actually do the job right.
Because it's hit so much quickly, where Sweden, for example, is mm-hmm. it's beyond Spain or Ireland, you know, yeah. certain countries have had these advantages. So with Spain, with everything kind of hit and accelerated by the pandemic and, mm-hmm. you know, the explosion of yeah. it, it creates more opportunities to create a false kind of identity yeah. or false authority, because that's there's it. Not the established ones for years. Yeah, it's
yeah, that's it. And mm-hmm. we are trying to reverse that bit by bit. And I think this is not, as you say, it's not like an issue only in Spain. I mean, I think every new kind of discipline, even in academia, has this kind of tentatives, let's say, right, to exploit it. But we have to take it slowly, I think, in Spain, and really, really reflect on what we are doing, because if we don't do it right, then it won't have, I mean, people will see that it's not working in a few years, and mm-hmm. it will be discredited. And that's, I mean, that's the worst that could happen, right? That people say, no, we tried that out, it's not working. And it's not working because it's not done by professionals. It's like, I don't know, it's like I'm not a programmer, right, a coder, but I could learn some by, I don't know, watching YouTube tutorials, right? That wouldn't make me a good professional. Mm. And of course, there are always exceptions, but I really think in Spain there is a problem with this, with trying to be in esports, whatever it takes. And yeah, everyone can be in esports, but you... No, but
I'm a marketing everyone... professor.
Everyone can be in esports, but you have to be, I think you have to be aware of what you can really contribute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone can contribute in a valuable way. Everyone.
Well, actually, yeah, Lilia, I think you've contributed in a very valuable way. I think this has actually been very interesting on rituals and spirituality of music in esports, and a little bit about Spain. I mean, so the final question is, of course, what research would you like to see done? What are your future research recommendations that might inspire maybe someone thinking about doing a thesis on this subject, or someone, an established researcher, or, you know, what would you like to see happen? Or
I would like to see more on music in esports, not only in-game music, but what I call around-game music in some of my work. There is this very, very big, very wide scene happening, and there is so much to do. I mean, I did that article on KDA, and on True Damage, and I did this talk on KDA, but there were just very, very tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm.
Last week there was this event on what's it called, Pentakill from Riot Music. It was an interactive event. It was so good. It was great. There were people from all around the globe, and that's worthy of studying. I mean, that's a new way of socializing. That's a new way of making music and enjoying music, and that totally, absolutely deserves at least 5 pieces. But yeah, there will be so many much coming up. I would like to see a bit more attention put on all these events, and not only on the game per se. And in the rest of the fields, I think there is a very big, very great community doing a lot of very interesting research. I mean, every day we're having these amazing articles, right, on every field possible in esports, which really contributes to create a very multidisciplinary, very, very interesting kind of melting pot.
Mm.
You made me more interested in rituals. Rituals within esports is one of the things takeaways I've had today. So, Yelena, thank you very much for being on the show. All her information will be below. She would keep going about what research she wanted to see because she loves this stuff, obviously. So I'm going to cut her off now because...
Yeah, no worries.
She's literally recommended 5 theses and another 17 projects there now. It's great to see such passion. And they'll be on the website and below this, there'll be lots of cool stuff and tips on what music to listen to, which I'm very excited to apply. Steph, any last remarks?
No, this has been great. And I think a really awesome example of how, fields from all over and disciplines from all over merge so nicely with video game and specifically esports research. So it's just been really cool to hear about what you're doing, and I'm really excited to see more.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had a super good time. I hope I was comprehensible because my English is a bit rusty. But yeah, thank you very, very much for this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you.